Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Coming up tonight, 6:30 tip-off, Game 4 of the NBA Finals. And believe it or not, the Indiana Pacers currently hold a 2-1 series lead. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I almost feel like tonight's game is do or die for the Thunder. We'll see if our next guest feels the exact same way. Second time we've gotten James Hollis, our NBA analyst, on this week, but for good reason. Like I said, tonight, the team with the best record in the NBA could be facing what I'm going to call a must-win situation. James, always great to get you on the show. Thank you.
As the legendary philosopher, the great Mike Scott once said, boy, well, how the turntable.
Anytime we can get a Michael Scott reference on the show, I'm always up for that. Yeah, seriously. I mean, you and I were texting following Game 3 the other night, and I was incredibly impressed with what I saw from Indiana, specifically down the stretch of this game. At about the four-minute mark, if I can remember correctly, Obi goes back with a put-back dunk, and the place just erupted. And it was at that very moment that I said, okay, it's 2-1 Indiana. At that moment, I felt like Oklahoma City was dead in the water in that particular game. Even though Indiana had little spurts throughout the entire Game 3, I always felt like OKC would figure it out, they'd find their way late, and they'd pull this game out, and that would set the tone for the next two games of this series. But James, I was wrong, and I was wrong wildly as we sit here in a 2-1 Indiana lead.
I remember me and you both, before the series and even after the game one win by the Pacers, we basically gave them the gold star for, you know, hey, good job, good effort, you're trying hard. But we both, we'll be honest, we both kind of thought this would be a, you know, maybe it was a foregone conclusion. The Thunder had been the best team in the league far and away all season. And while Indiana had a nice resurgence second half, like, no one expected this. And then this series started, and then Game 2 happened. So no one expected this because we thought, okay, Thunder back in control. We are seeing, it makes me think of the Lakers and Detroit Pistons back in 2005?
2004-5, yep.
Yep, and it makes me feel like that because, like, no one would have thought this was possible. But the Pacers did, and the Pacers are making, they're trying to make history. They're two games away from winning a world champion.
How wild is it to you that Indiana has a 2-1 series lead and through three games, Tyrese Halliburton has not attempted a single free throw?
Super wild, and it just everything about this team is so unique and so just off the beaten path, right? He's their best player, and he, you know, if he takes 14 shots and he scores 18 points, they have just as good a chance of winning as if he scores 40. Probably a better chance because that means he's moving the ball. Let's think about it. Honestly, Ben Shepherd, you know, Nembhard, these are names that even like diehard NBA fans probably don't really know.
Yeah.
They are making contributions here in the finals. Obi Toppin was given away by the Knicks. It was last year or 2 years ago, basically. And he's hitting clutch three-pointers and making big plays in the fourth quarter against the team that was the prohibitive favorite to win the finals this year. So this has been, to me, I get it. I hear the ratings talk. I hear people who, that one guy went on ESPN and he was saying that, oh, give me a super team or give me death. To me, this is one of the most enjoyable finals I've seen in I can't remember how long.
Yeah, I don't care anything about the ratings. I really don't. It means absolutely nothing to me. Anytime I see anything pop up about the ratings, I completely disregard it because at the end of the day, here on the show, we're going to talk NBA basketball. I don't care if two people are watching. We're going to talk NBA basketball. And I think if you are a diehard NBA fan, I don't even think you have to be a diehard. I think you have to be an NBA fan. You can't lie and say you haven't enjoyed the first three games of the series because even if you're a basketball fan in general, it's been entertaining.
That's it, right? Even if, I think you brought up someone who's not really familiar with basketball and you introduced them to these finals as their first introduction to, like, hey, this is the NBA. They'd have to be entertained, right? Because I think you'd see immediately, oh, that guy Shea, he's really, really good. And you could say, oh, yeah, he won the MVP. And they say, oh, wow, that guy Nembhard, he looks like he's really, really good sometimes, but why isn't that doing more? Like, there are things that just pop out about these games. Last year, obviously, Celtics fans were really happy. I understand why other fan bases weren't that entertained, because it was pretty one-sided, right? The Dallas Mavericks lost 4-1, and Luka didn't do anything exciting. Kyrie had his moments, but it wasn't a great final. I can understand why people would say that. this has been absolutely enthralling. And the fact that the results are so different than what everybody expected, and we don't know what's going to happen now, right? I think we're in uncharted territory for both the Thunder and the Pacers. So, yeah, absolutely fascinating. This is high cinema.
One thing that did stand out to me, James, if I go back to Game 3, I saw a lot of overextending from this Oklahoma City defense early on, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they don't want Halliburton playing in space, right? But when you watch this, are you seeing a lot of miscues defensively from Oklahoma City on adjustments kind of on the fly? Because it looked like Indiana was able to take advantage of that throughout Game 3.
I think, and this is why people are saying Carlisle's a genius of a coach, and this is why people are saying Halliburton's a superstar, even though the numbers don't pop. There's one play where he came off the screen and roll, and he knows that the Thunder want to close out hard on all shooters. But he comes off the screen and roll, and he's been doing this thing where he gets skip passes, or he does these hit-ahead passes that are out of rhythm from what the defense thinks is going to happen. So he pump fakes to the wing, and his defender goes flying after the ball, but the ball and he just pulls up and takes a three. Carlisle's done a great job of putting these guys in positions because they know that the Thunder want to be super physical and use their speed and physicality to their advantage. So they're it's almost like with a jiu-jitsu where they're using the opponent's physicality against them, and they're shifting the defense and they're getting guys into pockets. And the guys who are getting in pockets are being confident with the ball where they were getting stripped in the first couple games. And it's a whole different – the Pacers are just – I mean, it's almost like the Duke boys. Remember Dukes of Hazzard? Because you think that they get caught and they do something, and look at that. You thought the Duke boys couldn't get out of that jam, and they're out of the jam. They go flying off the ramp, and they get away from Boss Hogg. So somehow the Pacers are just staying one step ahead of the Thunder, and they're up 2-1.
Man, you've dropped a Office and now a Dukes of Hazzard reference. You are feeling it today, aren't you?
Hey, man, I got a haircut. I had the day off. It's here. Let's roll.
Rick Carlisle, we had this talk on the show yesterday. I think if he figures out a way, if the Pacers figure out a way to get this done and they win two more games, he will have two of the most unlikely championship seasons, I think, in the history of the NBA. You and I have talked about when he won it in Dallas, and the gauntlet that he had to go through with Kobe and Gasol, and then the Thunder with Durant and Westbrook and Harden, and then he had to go through the Heat with LeBron and Wade and Bosch, and you take a look at what he's gone through so far in this particular playoff set. James, to me, he becomes, and I have no problem saying this, he becomes all-time for me. Really, I think it's absolutely incredible if they figure out a way to get this done yet again.
100% agree with you, man, because no matter what, sure, he's had some great regular seasons. He has the longevity. He has a great resume already. But just the fact you can say, this is the coach that toppled LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, you know, all in their prime, and, you know, on a team that was built to win championships. He toppled them, you know, with basically Dirk and a band of merry men. And then this juggernaut of a Thunder team that everyone is saying is built for it to be to rule the NBA as an empire for the next decade. He is dismantling them and finding ways, almost like the resistance against the stormtroopers and the Empire in Star Wars. Like, he's just getting it done, and it's impressive.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at the opposite side, we look at Oklahoma City, through three games, I really don't feel like I can sit here and say that the Thunder have played bad basketball. And that's the other thing, where if I'm an Indiana fan, I feel pretty confident going into tonight's game, because I don't think at any point in time in this series have I looked at the Thunder and said, boy, that was bad, right? OKC just had a bad night. I've said that about Indiana. I haven't said that one time about Oklahoma City.
Absolutely. And, I'll say this. Game two, right, I'll give the Thunder their props. Game two, they kind of, like, reached back and they found and they looked like that kind of dominant team for a big swath in the first half of game two when they got up big against the Pacers. But I think they're kind of used to being able to break team spirits, right? And after that, all the hooting and hollering and chest bumping, like, they really feel themselves. And then this is the finals. Next game didn't matter, and you're back at it, and you're back in the mud with a team that is not scared of you, right? The Pacers have shown they're not scared. So, But yes, the Pacers should be very confident because the Thunder have been at full strength. Shea has had offensive explosions. Williams has had big games. Chet hasn't really blown up yet, but they're keeping him. And he's a young player. Like this is the first dip of real basketball. So the Pacers and Pacers fans should be very, very confident. And the Thunder fans should probably, you know, be on edge right now.
Who wins tonight?
My head always, like, we had a whole season full of evidence that tells us that the Thunder is such a better team. So, but this is recency bias, and I think this is the kind of recency bias we need. As of right now, these teams are dead, you know, dead even almost as far as potential. And as of right now, I know that Coach Daggs is a great coach, great young coach. He's analytical. He's very forward-thinking. Well, right now he's being out-coached by Carlisle. So at home, Pacers, all the momentum, all the home energy. We saw what the bench does at home. I think the Pacers might go up 3-1, man. I'm going to give it to them. I'm going to call my shot again. Pacers are going to go up 3-1.
I think if they go up 3-1, they win the series. I don't see Oklahoma City winning three consecutive games. And the other thing that we have not talked about yet, how about this home court by Indiana? I mean, that place was so loud the other night, and I really didn't even – I didn't comprehend this being the first NBA Finals game since 2000 when Reggie Miller went up against the Lakers. That's the first time they have played in the Finals in their home arena. That place was loud. It was electric. I don't see Oklahoma City going back and winning a Game 6. That's why I think it's do or die tonight for the Thunder.
It is, and I think we all know the numbers. A team that goes up 3-1 in any series – it's like, you know, I think they win the series like some gaudy number, like 96% of the time or 93% of the time. So it's and then that kind of pressure on a young team like the Thunder, we would really see what they're made of, right? Where the rubber meets the road with that team. So yeah, you go down 3-1 with a team that is not scared of you, with a team that you can't seem to figure out, with a team whose best player, again, doesn't care if he takes 12 shots or 10 shots as long as they get the W. And he's been – let's give Tyrese Haliburton his flowers. He's been amazing defensively this series, too, for the most part, where that's been a knock on him. So if you go down 3-1, that's pretty much all she wrote, and the Thunder would have to really – be one of those teams to come back. And I don't know. They're showing they might not be one of those teams.
It's only happened one time in the history of the NBA Finals. That was the Cleveland Cavaliers back in 2016. And while it's a completely different landscape in the NBA, Cleveland had a prime LeBron James. Odds aren't good, man. It's not good. You go down 3-1 of the NBA Finals, that's about all she wrote.
I'll say this, too. There's been a lot of discourse about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's an amazing player. He's an MVP.
Yep.
He's putting up numbers this year where people were comparing him to Michael Jordan and you know, Kobe Bryant. And this is part of his legacy. Now, win or lose is part of his legacy. I'm not saying they're going to lose, right? But this is part of his story that's being written. And right now, they're down 2-1. His scoring has went down every game so far. He scored 24 last game. His first game, you know, not scoring 30, and you know, it's some record that just snapped. And this is it. Can he put the team on his shoulders and really elevate them, or is he still a young guy taking his lumps?
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately, you talk about, you know, being a prisoner of the moment, recency bias. I mean, that's such a real thing in today's NBA. It's a real thing in all sports, right? And it's sad that if, you know, you take a look at Shai, if they don't get the win this season, I mean, he's going to be the center of a lot of criticism throughout the offseason. And it's definitely not justified, but the fact of the matter is, they are going up against a team in the NBA Finals that they finished 18 games better than in the regular season, right? So I think your reference to the Lakers and Pistons going back to 2004, I think it's spot on for that very reason.
Yeah, I mean, look, people are giving Ant-Man a hard time for losing to the best team in the NBA and how he looked against these games. He's getting picked apart. So, that's why it's so enjoyable. I think me and you are both kind of giddy about this series because we were rooting for the Pacers, but we tried to be logical about it. We've both seen a lot of basketball. I didn't see these results coming at all, and maybe we should have from the way the Pacers kind of chewed through the Cavaliers and then kind of, you know, manhandled the Knicks. But I think maybe we've been underrating the Pacers all this time.
Oh, I agree. No, I agree 100%. And you point back to what SGA has done throughout the finals, 38 in game one, 34 in game two. They get a win, 24 in game three. They get a loss. The other thing that's been so hard to pinpoint, I don't know if you could say, well, Shea's got to get 30-plus to get a win because he's done that in this series and they still lost. He dropped 38 in game one and they still lost, right? You go back to game two, I think it was his most efficient game. By far, he shot over 50%. But one of the things that the Pacers have done, they have made him... the efficiency has continued to drop. I think that's even more important than the point total, right? Drop game by game.
I mean, absolutely. And the fact that he had six turnovers last game, which that might be like a career high for him, or at least up there, that's a big deal. And, I think we all fans, underrate how much the familiarity aspect comes into play when you're in a series like this, because you're playing the same team every night, and you start picking up on the rhythm, pick up the characteristics, and all of a sudden, that move that he killed you with in the first game, you're ready for it by game four. And that's what we're seeing, I think. And this is where it's on Coach Dagenault to really kind of dig into his bag and maybe bring out something to kind of break the Pacers' defensive rhythm, because the Pacers' defense is getting better every game as they've kind of keyed in on what the Thunder want to do. So this is going to really test Coach Dags. Is going to test Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because they really have to dig in and find a way to overcome what's, you know, they've been in a position like this. All season has been kind of easy for them, right? Easy, breezy, and fun. This isn't fun. This is where the work comes in.
He's James Holas, joins us each week to talk NBA basketball. Again, second segment this week. By the time we talk next week, well, we may be done. NBA season may be over. I guess the good news is regardless, win or lose, Oklahoma City is going to get a couple of nights off, and they may very well need it. James, always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time. Can't wait to do it again next week.
Man, I had a rough week, but I was looking forward to chopping it up, talking basketball with you, and this is going to be a great game tonight. Mm-hmm. So let's do it.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, as always.
You're the man.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always fun to get James Holas here on the show. Always fun to talk some NBA basketball. I'll be back to do it again on Monday. We'll see you then. Be safe. I am out.